Good morning and welcome to Claude Daily, the show that keeps you up to speed on everything happening in the world of Claude and Anthropic. I'm Alex.
And I'm Sam. Happy Thursday, everybody. June 4th, 2026.
June 4th already. We are, what, halfway through the year almost?
Basically, time does not slow down, man.
It does not. And today, we've got a packed show. There is a genuinely fascinating piece of research out of Anthropic's security team. We're talking about a full year's worth of data on how bad actors are actually using AI to do malicious things. Real data, not speculation.
Yeah, this one I actually stayed up too late reading last night, which, I'll be honest, does not happen with every security report. Usually security reports are like, threat actors continue to do threat actor things, and you close the tab. This one is different.
It's different. We'll get into why. And then on the product side, Claude Code has dropped some pretty significant updates. A new dashboard for managing multiple AI agents running in parallel. A feature called /goal that basically lets Claude keep working on your behalf across conversation turns without you having to babysit it.
Which, if you have used Claude Code for anything serious, you will immediately understand why that matters.
Exactly right. Plus, we're going to dig into some of the architecture stuff. How Claude Code actually manages its context window. Which is one of those things that sounds dry, but when you understand it, it genuinely changes how you use the tool.
It's one of those under-the-hood things that once you see it, you can't unsee it.
All right, let's get into it. So the big story today. Anthropic's security researchers have published findings from a year-long analysis. We're talking March 2025 through March 2026, where they looked at 832 accounts that were banned for malicious cyber activity. And they mapped all of those cases against something called MITRE ATT&CK.
Okay, so for people who aren't security nerds, and I count myself in that category mostly, MITRE ATT&CK is basically the industry's go-to framework for cataloging how attackers actually operate, what tactics they use, what techniques they use. It's like a shared vocabulary for the security world.
Exactly. So it's not just, we found bad guys doing bad things. It's here is precisely where in the attack chain AI is showing up, mapped against this rigorous framework that the whole industry uses.
And that mapping piece is what makes this genuinely useful, because you can compare it to historical data, you can compare it across organizations. It's not just Anthropic saying, trust us, this is what we're seeing.
Right. So what did they find? The headline finding. And this is the part that I think surprised some people, because the narrative around AI and cybersecurity often focuses on the scary scenario of AI writing malware, AI launching attacks on its own. And that's not really what they found.
No, and this is the nuance that I think gets lost in the broader conversation about AI-enabled attacks. The finding is that threat actors are increasingly using AI in what researchers call the post-compromise stages of an attack. So, lateral movement, account discovery, these are things that happen after you're already inside a network.
Which is a really important distinction, because it means AI isn't necessarily being used to kick the door open.
Right, the initial intrusion, the phishing email, whatever. That stuff is still mostly the same. But once you're in...
AI becomes this incredibly powerful tool for figuring out where to go next.
And that's actually more dangerous in a lot of ways, right? Because post-compromise, you're past a lot of the initial defenses. You're inside the perimeter. And historically, the limiting factor for attackers at that stage has been skill. Like, you need to understand Active Directory. You need to understand network topology. You need to know how to find the things worth stealing, and AI starts to lower that bar significantly.
So what Anthropic is essentially documenting is that the skill floor for conducting sophisticated attacks is dropping.
That's the key phrase. Less sophisticated actors. And I want to be careful here because we're not talking about script kiddies launching DDoS attacks. We're talking about threat actors who can get into a network but previously wouldn't have had the expertise to move around quietly once they were inside. AI is starting to close that gap.
And the 832 accounts, that's the actual enforcement action Anthropic took over the year. These are bans. These are real people, real accounts, caught doing real malicious things.
Which, I want to sit with that number for a second. 832 over 12 months. That is a meaningful data set. That's not a handful of edge cases. You can start to see patterns in 832 data points.
You can. And what I found interesting about how this report is framed is that it's very explicitly about helping the broader security community. They're publishing the MITRE ATT&CK mappings, the technique breakdowns. This is designed to be used.
It's almost like, and I think this is intentional, Anthropic is saying, look, we are a participant in the security ecosystem, not just a vendor. We see things from our position that nobody else can see. We have a view into how our own system is being misused. And rather than just quietly banning accounts, we're going to share what we're learning.
Which is good, honestly. I think the concern for a long time was that AI companies would be, I don't want to say defensive, but maybe not forthcoming about the ways their products were being abused.
Yeah, and there's an obvious business incentive to not talk about it, right? Nobody wants to be the headline companies AI used to hack things. So publishing this is, it's a meaningful choice.
The other thing I'll note is that the post-compromise focus has a somewhat reassuring angle, which is that it suggests the most catastrophic scenarios. AI autonomously launching novel cyber attacks, discovering zero-day vulnerabilities at scale. Those are not what we're seeing at volume right now.
Right. The nightmare scenario where AI becomes the attacker. That's not this report. This is, AI is a really useful assistant for humans who are already doing malicious things.
Which is still bad, but it's a different kind of bad. It's tractable in different ways.
And it means that a lot of the existing defensive infrastructure still matters. If you're doing good network monitoring, if you're doing good endpoint detection, you can still catch this activity. It's not like AI has suddenly made all of that irrelevant.
Though I would push back slightly and say, if AI is making attackers faster and more systematic at lateral movement and discovery, then even good defenses have less time to respond.
Fair point. The dwell time probably shrinks.
The dwell time shrinks. The window where defenders can catch something before real damage is done gets narrower.
Which is actually a case for AI on the defensive side too, right? If the attacker is using AI to move faster, then the defender needs AI to detect faster.
And I think that's part of what Anthropic is signaling here. Like, this is the landscape now. Both sides are going to be using these tools. The question is who uses them more effectively.
It's a weird new equilibrium. It's been weird watching it play out over the last year.
It has. And having this kind of rigorous, mapped, published data about where AI is actually showing up in attack chains, that's genuinely useful for figuring out where to invest on the defensive side.
100%. Okay, I want to ask about the methodology for a second. The accounts that were banned, how does Anthropic know they were specifically doing cyber attacks? Like, is this people trying to use Claude to help them hack things, or is there also account activity that's more subtle?
That's a great question, and I think the honest answer is it's a range. Some of it is relatively explicit. People prompting Claude to help them with specific attack techniques, to help them understand how to move laterally through a network. Some of it is more contextual. And that's part of why the MITRE attack mapping is so valuable, because it gives you a structured way to categorize what you're seeing even when the individual interactions look different.
Right. So it's not like every one of those 832 accounts said, please help me hack this company. It's the pattern of what they were asking about maps to attack methodologies.
Exactly. And that kind of behavioral pattern analysis it's hard. It's genuinely hard to do well. You have to balance it against the fact that a lot of legitimate security work looks similar on the surface. Penetration testers, security researchers, they're asking similar questions for very different reasons.
The dual use problem. It's everywhere in this space.
It is. All right. I think that's the right level of depth for this one. The full report is out on Anthropic's website. Their security research section, if you want to dig into the MITRE attack breakdowns yourself. I highly recommend it if you work in security or if you're just intellectually curious about how these systems are being weaponized.
It's one of those things where even if you're not a security professional, it will recalibrate how you think about AI risk, because it's not the sci-fi version of the risk. It's a much more mundane but very real version.
Mundane risk. That's a good way to put it.
Unglamorous but important.
Speaking of the more practical side of what Anthropic is building.
Yeah, let's pivot.
Claude Code, week 20. And there are two things in this release that I want to spend real time on, because I think they represent a genuine step change in how Claude Code functions as a tool.
Yeah, can I just say up front? I've been using Claude Code pretty heavily for the last few months, and week 20 feels like the update where it goes from impressive prototype to actual workflow tool. Like, it crossed a threshold for me.
Okay, let's unpack why. The first big thing is what they're calling the agent dashboard, accessed via a command called Claude Agents, which gives you a unified interface for managing multiple concurrent sessions.
So this sounds simple, but the implications are huge. Up until now, if you wanted to run multiple Claude Code sessions in parallel, like have one working on a feature branch while another is doing something else, you were basically just juggling terminal windows. There was no unified view.
And the new dashboard changes that. You get a single place where you can see all your running sessions, and they're tagged with a status: running, blocked, or completed.
That middle one, blocked, that's the interesting one.
Right, because running and completed are what you'd expect. But blocked is Claude code telling you I've hit a point where I need input from you before I can continue.
Which is, I mean, that's incredibly useful. Because right now, if you kick off an agent on a long task and it gets stuck on something it doesn't know how to handle, you might not find out until way later. You come back and it's just been sitting there.
Right, the classic, I set it running and now I don't know what happened problem. And the dashboard surfaces that proactively. You can glance at your agents and immediately know. These two are still running. This one finished. This one needs you.
It's basically a flight controller view, like mission control for your AI workers.
I like that framing. And the use case that jumps out to me is code review, right? Or anything where you might have a bunch of parallel work streams, different components, different tests, different documentation tasks, and you want all of them happening at once.
Yeah, or even just exploratory work. Like, you have multiple hypotheses about how to approach a problem and you want to run them in parallel rather than sequentially. The old constraint was you'd have to wait for one to finish or check in on them separately. Now you've got one pane of glass.
The cost of parallelism goes down.
Dramatically. And the interesting thing about cost here is it's not just clock time, it's cognitive overhead. Having to track 5 different terminal sessions in your head is its own kind of work. The dashboard offloads that.
That's exactly right. Okay, the second big thing from week 20 is the slash goal feature. And this one I want to explain carefully because I think people might read the description and miss what it actually does.
Yeah, explain this one.
So traditionally in Claude Code and in AI assistants generally, you have a conversational model. You say something, the AI responds. You say something else, the AI responds. Back and forth. And if you have a complex multi-step task, you might need to keep nudging it along. Okay, now do this, now do that. There's this overhead of staying in the loop.
Right? You're basically the project manager for your own AI assistant, which is kind of ironic.
Slash goal changes that dynamic. You specify a goal, a completion condition, and Claude Code will autonomously continue working across multiple turns until it determines that goal has been met.
So it's not just do this thing, it's don't stop until this is true.
Exactly. And that's a fundamentally different mental model. Instead of giving it instructions, you're giving it a destination.
Okay, I have to ask the obvious question, which is, what happens when it gets stuck? Like, if you say don't stop until all tests pass, and there's a bug that it can't figure out, does it just spin forever?
And that's where the two features actually connect beautifully. If it hits a blocker, it surfaces as blocked in the agent dashboard. So you haven't given up control. You've delegated execution while retaining the ability to see when it needs help.
Oh, that's okay. Now I see why these two things ship together. They're designed to work together.
They're a system. The dashboard is the visibility layer slash goal is the execution layer. You set goals, you get out of the way, and you know you can glance at the dashboard whenever to see if you need to intervene.
That's genuinely elegant. It's not autonomous AI doing things without oversight. It's autonomous AI doing things with just-in-time oversight. You intervene when you're needed, not as a constant babysitter.
And I think that's the right model for where we are right now in terms of AI capability. Fully autonomous is probably too much for most workflows. Requiring constant supervision is too little value. This middle ground where it runs until it needs you, that's actually really practical.
And it lets you scale up how much you're delegating gradually, right? Like, you can start with small goals, get a feel for how it handles blockers, and then give it bigger and bigger goals as your confidence builds.
Yeah, trust building through experience, which is how it should work.
I want to go back to something you said earlier about the blocked status, because I think there's a subtle thing here. When does Claude decide it's blocked versus when does it try to figure something out on its own?
That's the judgment call that I think is still being calibrated, honestly. Like, you probably don't want it stopping to ask you every small thing. That defeats the purpose. But you also don't want it making significant decisions without checking with you.
Right. There's a version where it's too needy and a version where it's overconfident, and they're both bad.
Exactly. And I think this is going to be one of those things that improves a lot over time as Anthropic gets usage data on where the blocking threshold should be. What kinds of situations actually warrant interrupting the user versus what can it handle on its own?
Which brings up an interesting question about the goal feature in terms of scope. Like, can you be intentionally vague about the completion condition? Or does it need to be very specific?
I think the spirit of it is, The more specific your goal, the better it can assess whether it's met it. All unit tests pass is very specific. The code is good is not very useful as a completion condition.
So it forces you to be precise about what success looks like, which honestly is a good discipline in general.
It is. It makes you articulate what you actually want, which a lot of people, and I include myself in this, are pretty sloppy about.
There's a whole project management philosophy in there. Define done before you start.
Exactly. All right, let's talk about the context window piece. Because this is one I want to spend some time on, even though it's more of a technical documentation update than a feature release. I think it's really valuable for understanding how to use Claude Code well.
Yeah, the context window docs. I think people skim these and they shouldn't. There's actually a lot in here.
So for people who might not be familiar with the term, the context window is essentially everything Claude can see at any given moment. All the information it has access to when it's processing something. And understanding what's in that window, and especially what survives when the window gets compacted, is crucial for power users.
Wait, explain compaction for people who haven't hit it.
So as a Claude Code session runs, as you're going back and forth, adding files, running code, that context window fills up. There's a finite amount it can hold at once. When you approach the limit, there's a compaction process where less important information gets compressed or removed to make room.
So it's like your AI assistant starts to have a limited short-term memory. And the question is, what does it remember versus what does it forget?
That's a really good way to put it. And the documentation lays this out in a way that I found clarifying. So system prompts, the core instructions that define how Claude Code behaves, those persist unchanged through compaction. That's the bedrock that always stays.
Okay, that makes sense. You always want the fundamental operating parameters to be stable.
Then there are what they call unscoped rules. These are configuration things that apply globally to how Claude Code behaves in your environment. Those persist too.
So things like always use this coding style or never commit directly to main, those survive.
Right. Now here's the interesting part, path-scoped rules. These are rules that apply specifically to certain files or directories. And the behavior here is different. They don't just persist universally. They reload only when their matching files are actually read during a session.
Oh, interesting. So they're not sitting in memory all the time. They get pulled in dynamically when relevant.
Exactly. Which makes intuitive sense when you think about it. If you have rules specific to your database layer, you don't need those loaded into the context window while you're working on your front-end components.
It's lazy loading, the same pattern you'd use in software for the same reason. Don't load stuff you don't need yet.
And that's actually a clever architectural choice because it means you can have very granular, directory-specific rules without paying the context window cost for all of them all the time.
Which becomes really important for large code bases where you might have 100 different directories with different conventions and constraints.
Right. You couldn't possibly keep all of that in context simultaneously. So the dynamic loading is the solution.
What about conversation history? Like the actual back and forth in a session?
That's the part that compacts most aggressively. The earlier parts of the conversation, once the session has been running for a while, get compressed or summarized. Recent context stays fresh, older stuff gets distilled.
Which is actually how human memory works. Like you don't remember every word of a meeting from 2 hours ago, but you remember the key points.
Exactly. And this is where understanding compaction actually changes how you use the tool. If there's something important you want Claude Code to keep in focus throughout a long session, you're better off having it in a persistent rule or a document that gets referenced, rather than just having said it once in the conversation.
Because that once said thing might get compacted away.
Right. The conversation is ephemeral. The rules and documents are durable, so architect your instructions accordingly.
That's actually really practical advice. I have definitely had the experience of telling Claude Code something early in a session and then wondering why it seemed to forget it an hour later. And now I understand why.
It's not forgetting. It's compacting, which is different in an important way. It's managed, it's predictable, and you can work with it if you understand it.
Rather than fighting it.
The documentation also goes into how tool outputs get handled. So like when Claude Code runs a shell command or reads a file, the output of that goes into the context window too.
And I imagine large file reads can eat up context window really fast.
They absolutely can. And this is another thing where understanding the architecture helps you be more efficient. If you're doing something that reads a bunch of large files, you're burning context window. Sometimes that's necessary, but sometimes you can be more targeted about what you're loading.
It's like you want to give Claude Code exactly the information it needs and not more.
Exactly. surgical rather than comprehensive, at least when you have a choice.
This is making me rethink how I structure my Claude Code sessions. I've been kind of treating the context window as a black box and just trusting it to handle things.
And for a lot of use cases, that's fine. It handles things pretty well. But for long, complex, multi-step work, having this mental model of what's persistent versus what's transient, it really does change how you set things up at the start.
Front-load the important stuff into durable places.
Front-load the important stuff. Put it in config, put it in documents, put it in your rules. Don't rely on having said it once in the conversation.
Okay, so tying all of this together, the week 20 features and the context window architecture, I feel like there's a coherent vision of what Claude Code is becoming here. Like, it's not just a coding assistant that sits in your terminal. It's starting to look like an autonomous agent that you deploy and manage.
That's a really good characterization. The shift is from tool you use to agent you manage.
And the context window documentation, the agent dashboard, the slash goal feature, they all serve that same vision. If you're going to have an agent running autonomously on complex tasks, you need to understand what it knows and how that knowledge persists. You need visibility into what it's doing, and you need a way to give it objectives rather than just instructions.
It's a full stack of agentic capability. The substrate of knowledge management, the execution layer, and the monitoring layer.
And they're all shipping together, which suggests this was designed as a system rather than three separate features.
I think that's right. And what I find interesting is how it maps back to the security conversation we had earlier. Because the more autonomous these agents become, the more they're running laterally across your codebase, making decisions, executing actions, the more the questions about what they do and don't do become security relevant.
Oh, that's a great point. Like an AI agent that can move through your codebase, read files, run commands, that's not that different in its capabilities from a post-compromise attacker doing reconnaissance.
Which is not to say Claude Code is a security risk. It absolutely isn't, in that sense. But it is to say that the same capabilities that make it powerful as a developer tool are the same capabilities that make AI dangerous in adversarial hands.
So the security research and the product development are, they're kind of mirrors of each other in terms of the underlying capability questions.
Two sides of the same coin. Anthropic has to be thinking about both simultaneously. Here's how we make this more capable, and here's how we make sure that capability isn't weaponized.
That's a really interesting position to be in as a company.
It is, and I think that tension, the productive tension between build powerful things and understand the risks of powerful things, that's kind of what these two big stories today are about at a deeper level.
You're getting philosophical on me before 10 a.m.
It's a philosophical kind of day, Sam.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right. I do want to come back to one practical thing on week 20 before we move on. The slash goal feature. Are there limits on what kinds of goals you can set? Like, can you say, don't stop until this entire application is feature complete?
I think technically you can, but, and this is important, that would probably be a bad goal to set. Not because Claude Code can't handle it, but because the goal is too vague and too large. The feature is most powerful when the completion condition is actually accessible. Can Claude Code look at the current state and determine whether the goal is met? If the goal is all tests pass, yes. If the goal is the application is feature complete, that's a human judgment call.
Right. And you want the completion condition to be something Claude Code can autonomously verify.
Exactly. Otherwise, you'll either get premature completion, it decides it's done when it's not, or it runs indefinitely because it can't actually determine when the goal is met.
Testable, verifiable outcomes. Classic software principle, actually.
Classic software principle applied to AI agent behavior. Yes.
I wonder if there's going to be a whole best practices genre around writing good goals for Claude Code, the way there's been a whole genre around writing good prompts for language models.
Almost certainly. Like, prompt engineering became its own skill set. Agent goal specification might become its own skill set.
Goal engineering.
Goal engineering. And I think it will come naturally as people use it more. You'll learn pretty quickly what kinds of goals work well and what kinds don't.
You always learn from the failures.
You always learn from the failures. All right, let's start wrapping up and hit a few of the broader themes before we close out.
Yeah, let's do it.
So stepping back, because I like to do this at the end, kind of pull the threads together. What is today's episode actually about? On the surface, it's about a cybersecurity report and some Claude Code feature updates, but I think there's something more unified going on here.
Yeah. Both of these stories are about understanding how AI systems operate in complex, multi-step, autonomous contexts. The security research is about how threat actors use AI to do complex, multi-stage things, lateral movement, discovery, that require sustained operation across an attack chain. And the Claude Code updates are about giving legitimate users the same kind of sustained autonomous multi-step capability.
And the context window architecture piece is the foundation for both. Understanding how these systems maintain and manage information over time is essential. Whether you're trying to defend against AI-enabled attacks or trying to use AI effectively for complex work.
It's information persistence and autonomous operation. Those are the two themes that tie it all together.
And those are two things that are going to keep getting more important as AI systems get more capable. The question of what does the AI know and for how long, and how do you give the AI a sustained task and get out of the way, those are going to be central engineering and design questions for the next several years.
And safety questions. Because more autonomous, more persistent AI operation is also more powerful in the wrong hands.
Right. Which is why the security research matters alongside the product development. You can't just ship the capability without understanding the threat model.
And Anthropic seems to be, more than almost any company I can think of in this space, genuinely trying to do both simultaneously. Not sequentially, not defensively, but as genuine co-equal priorities.
That's the bet. That is their whole thesis as a company, right? You can't separate safety from capability. They have to develop together.
And whether that bet pays off, I mean, that's the question of the decade in this industry.
Literally. It is literally the question of the decade. And I don't think we'll have a clean answer to it for a while. But publishing a report on how your system is being abused and simultaneously making your system more capable in ways that require careful thought about trust and oversight, that's at least consistent behavior. You can look at those two things and say, these are not in contradiction. These are coming from the same worldview.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. All right, you've made me feel things I didn't expect to feel about a Thursday morning tech podcast.
That's the goal. That's always the goal.
The slash goal feature for Claude Daily.
The slash goal for Claude Daily is leave listeners with something to think about. Check.
Done. Marked complete.
All right, one more thing I want to mention before we sign off, and this is more of a practical note than a big idea. If you're using Claude Code and you haven't looked at the context window documentation that we discussed today, I'd really encourage you to spend 20 minutes with it.
Yeah, this is one of those situations where the documentation is genuinely written for practitioners, not just for completeness. It's not a reference doc that you consult when something breaks. It's a guide that changes how you think about using the tool.
It's a mental model, not a manual.
Exactly. And mental models are worth more than most features, honestly. A good mental model of how a tool works will help you for years. A new feature will help you for a sprint.
Profound, genuinely profound.
I'm full of it today.
You are. The philosophical energy is high.
June 4th energy. It's a thing.
Okay. So to summarize what we covered today, Anthropic security researchers published findings from a year of tracking 832 accounts banned for malicious cyber activity mapped against the MITRE attack framework. The key finding is that AI is showing up most prominently in post-compromise stages of attacks, lowering the skill floor for sophisticated lateral movement and account discovery. Claude Code Week 20 introduced the Agent Dashboard, giving users a unified view of multiple parallel sessions with running, blocked, and completed status. The slash goal feature enables Claude to autonomously continue working toward a specified completion condition across conversation turns. And the context window documentation explains in detail how different types of information, system prompts, scoped rules, conversation history, persist differently through compaction, which has real practical implications for how you structure long sessions.
That's a dense episode. Good dense.
The best kind of dense. All right, that's Claude Daily for Thursday, June 4th, 2026. Thanks for spending your morning with us.
Really genuinely good episode today. These topics were worth the time.
Agreed. If you want to go deeper on any of this, the security report is on Anthropic's website under their research section. The Claude Code updates and context window docs are in the Claude Code documentation. Worth a read on all counts.
And if you have thoughts, questions, pushback, things you've noticed using these tools, we want to hear from you. That feedback shapes what we cover.
Always. All right, I'm Alex.
I'm Sam. We'll see you tomorrow.
Have a good one, everyone.